Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Georgia, Florida line. I hope that everyone is doing okay. To my people over in Russell County, Lee County, Alabama, what's up? To my people out in Talbot County, Taylor County, Schley County, Chattahoochee County, Marion County, Harris County, all around the Chattahoochee Valley area, especially to my people right here in Columbus, Georgia. I hope that you guys are doing well. Today is Sunday, June the 27th. You guys, this is the last Sunday of the first half of the year. Follow me now. The last Sunday of the first half of the year. This week, we will be going into July. July 1st is Thursday, and we will be starting the second half of the year. As a matter of fact, July 1 is the beginning of the new budget year for most governmental entities. The government budgets run from July 1 to the end of June of the next year. And so it's a lot that's going to be transpiring, a lot that's going to be going on. Of course, we are still in tropical season. Last weekend, we got a good bit of rain in here on Saturday from Tropical Storm Claudette. We are still looking at a few ways down there right now in the Caribbean and in the Atlantic Ocean that could bring us some more rain. And as I've said to you many times before, that we are positioned in the state of Georgia where if a strong storm comes up through the Gulf across the Panhandle of Florida, we could see significant impacts from it. So we got to make sure we watch that. I know it's something we don't talk about often, but let's watch that. You guys, we need to be conscious of the coronavirus as well. The Delta variant is still moving strongly out there. It's impacting a lot of people. Folks that have been vaccinated seems to be doing very well with it. Some folks are getting sick on a minor level, but if you've been vaccinated, you should be well protected, but still wear your mask, make sure you sanitize, make sure you wash your hands. We just want to cut down the spread on this as much as we possibly can. And that's how we protect our small children. If we make sure that it's not spreading, then it helps protect them, because right now, anybody under 12, they do not qualify for the vaccine. So we got to make sure that we look out for them like we did for ourselves before vaccines were available. So this is the last Sunday of our Men's Empowerment Month conversation. All month long, we've been talking to strong black men in our community that are making a difference, not men with titles, you know, no significant experience, just guys that care about what's going on in our community and making a difference on a local, state, or national level. And today is no exception. I'm glad to have with me today two great brothers. The first brother I have with me today is going to be Brother Norman Quarles. Many of you guys know who he is. He received the Points of Light acknowledgement from Congressman Bishop at this past Black History Month breakfast. He's also received the Martin Luther King Award from Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church during the Martin Luther King program. And this brother's just constantly out there in the community, in the grind, in the trenches. We're going to talk to him. We're going to get the real talk. Because I told them when we came on here, we didn't come here for fluff. We didn't come here for play. This is the real conversation. If we're going to truly deal with the issues that we see in our community, we got to talk to the people that know what's going on and not the folks that pretend to know because they have a title in front of their name. The next brother, man, this brother here, I admire this brother so much for what he's doing, for what he's been doing. It's been very quiet. A lot of people don't know it. This last election cycle saw some significant influence from Columbus, Georgia, and surprisingly, from a younger leader perspective. We had Dominic Perkins, who served on the state level of the Joe Biden campaign. He was, I think, the number three person, the state political director. So he was a part of the direct team that formulated everything for Joe Biden. And then we had a brother here, Kwame, who's from Columbus. He was a part of Joe Biden's traveling team, a part of the PR structure there with the Joe Biden presidential team. He's working still now in DC, doing great things. And this other brother that I have with me today, he worked with organizations to do the grunt work, to do the organizing, to turn people out to vote right here in Georgia, registering people, making sure that folks knew when the election was coming up, making sure they had the information that they need on the candidates that were running for these positions. He's also done work in Florida. He was a part of that team that helped the senator over in Alabama, Doug. I can't remember his last name. We'll talk about it shortly, though, that helped helped him become elected, that gave Alabama their first Democratic senator in quite a while. I mean, this brother's done significant work in Florida, registering thousands of convicted felons that when the Florida law changed that allowed them to vote, getting them registered to vote so they can participate. So let me go ahead and jump back in. As you see, we got two awesome brothers with us, and I'm excited to have them with me today. Brothers, how are y'all doing today?
I'm doing good, bro. Teddy, real good, man. Can't complain. Feeling good, Teddy. Good to be here with you today.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, brother. Well, Brother Norton, I'm going to start with you. You know, it's no secret if you're watching the news, if you're looking at Colin's Facebook page or anywhere else, we seem to have another problem emerging of homicides in this city, murders in this city. Mainly, we're losing, Norman, too many of our young black men. Too many of our neighborhoods are still going neglected. Too many of our folks are still looking for employment. Just problem after problem that we've been having for years that many of us have been talking about for a while, but has gone ignored because those people, certain folks in leadership, choose not to talk about it, choose not to address the real issue, deny that we have issues, deny that we may, you know, have a serious gang problem here. Brother Norman, I just want to ask you straight up, because you're out there in the trenches, you're working with these brothers. What do we need to do to try to turn some of this around?
First and foremost, Teddy, to be honest, I think we done lost our love for humanity as a whole. I mean, I don't even think we look at people or the young men in the streets or whoever. We're not caring about basically humanity, the humanity of a person. You know, that everybody has a right to be somebody or to do something special. And when we can't look at a person with those eyes, like this person is special, I think that's the problem. I think that's the biggest problem. We lost our love for humanity.
You know,
and to help people.
And I 100% agree with you on that. And I think, you know, we see that, and people may say, well, how do we do that? In my eyes, Norman, and you and I having this conversation, so you tell me how you feel about this. But I think that's reflected in the fact that, like with a lot of our recreational centers, we didn't close them down, but we defunded them. So that means they're not operating, which means they're basically closed down, which took away the community-based interactions that many of our young people were having, learning over the summer, learning after school, having somewhere to go, so they're just not standing around in the streets. I mean, you know, the neglect of many of our neighborhoods, like what we talked about earlier, you know, trash and stuff all along the road. The city's not coming through cutting the grass and the bushes like they supposed to. Street lights out and nobody's replacing them. You know, neighborhoods just looking thrown away. If we as leaders, if we don't fight for communities, certain communities here in Columbus, to get the same attention as some of the other high dollar communities here in the community in our city, then how do we expect them to be appreciative of where they are and want to fight and really create a peaceful place where they are?
Honestly, bro, we can't look for them to do it. I hear what you're saying and I agree, but the community got to do it. It ain't gonna come from the outside. See, that's the issue that a lot of people really don't want to deal with. You know, we all, you know, at some point look the other way as it pertains to, you know, so I'm not here to say what they should be doing. We as the community should be doing. We shouldn't have to go to City Hall to get what we need for our community. See, that's where I am. You know, that's why I come out here every day and stare young men in the face and lead them in a direction that's positive. We got to get out here. Okay, yes, I agree with everything you said. But at the same time, it has to start within us. I'm gonna share this, I had a meeting with some men. Let me say that. I had a meeting yesterday with some real powerful men in this community, and neither one of them worked, in City Hall or whatever. See, the power is out here in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Something was initiated yesterday. And it's gonna be some peaceful times coming.
Okay, that's
what I'm saying. And this is what I'm trying to across to you, bro. Brother Teddy, this is what I'm trying to get across to you. We can do it within ourselves. That's all I'm trying to say.
And I think there should be an effort.
Some of this stuff.
I 100% agree with you. I think there should be an effort. There should be a community component of it. We should do it within ourselves. But I'm just, I'm thinking about the community as a whole. And when you look at, yes, we have the component of the young folks, but we also have the component of those retired firefighters and military people and veterans and teachers and police officers and those many people that worked back in the day to buy their homes in many of these communities, and they've paid their mortgage off and they're on a fixed income. They can't afford to go nowhere else. So I'm looking at holistic community healing. Yes, we have a crime issue as well, but we got to heal the entire community too. We got to work to fix the entire community, and that is a component of, and I'm very glad to hear that you guys had that meeting, and I can't wait to see what comes out of that. But if we're going to go to these young guys and say we want you to stop doing this, and which we do want them to stop doing that, what are we offering them? Are we making sure that there are more jobs here in Columbus for them? Are we making sure that the young folks that are still in school and things of that nature have the best educational opportunity possible? Are we looking at the out of school suspension rates of sending our kids home versus keeping them within the academic setting so that they can continue to learn? Even if they're not in the classroom, there's somewhere else you can place them where they can continue to learn. It's these elements of the community as a whole that we're challenged with. And let me get Brother Lucas in right here real quick. Brother Lucas, down in Florida, you work very closely with a nonprofit that ran a statewide effort to register felons to vote and educate them on the fact that the Florida law had changed and that they could now participate in the election process. I want you to first tell us exactly what you guys were able to accomplish down there, and why was it so important, and the impact that it had, that a group that had been disenfranchised for far too long, taken away the right to vote, got that opportunity and made a difference down there in Florida. Talk about that a little bit for me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And again, it's great to be here with you today, Teddy. In the 2020 election cycle, I was the director of organizing for the Florida Vice Transformation Coalition, founded by Desmond Lee, who is what we call a returning citizen. We don't really use the first word, convicted felon. And He basically was able to work him up from homelessness, drug addiction. He contemplated suicide. He was very open about that. To graduating law school, the top of his class with a 4.0 GPA, and going on to fund and start the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, which was able to pass Amendment 4 in 2018, which gave returning citizens the right to vote inside the state of Florida for the first time. It was said to be the largest expansion of voting rights since the 1960s, because most states would allow people, after they finished their sentence, to vote. But for obvious reasons, for people who understand oppression systematically, felons in the state of Florida, returning citizens, were not able to vote until 2018. So I didn't work with them in 2018. I came on in 2020 as a director of organizing, and one of the biggest objectives on the table was voter registration. A returning citizen can directly impact the people, by directly impact the people who have family members, friends, etc., who've been incarcerated. And we went out and we hit the streets, and we were able to register close to 28,000 people to vote from directly impact the communities, and that were returning citizens. By law, we couldn't only technically register returning citizens, because that technically is considered to be discrimination, so we only worked in neighborhoods and communities that were the most impacted by mass incarceration and over sentencing, a lot of the legal practices that have led to the unfair, systematic oppression of people of color and of poor people in general in this country. And part of my job was to lead the effort that registered 30,000 people to vote. We were able to launch operations in about 10 cities throughout the state of Florida, from Miami, South Florida, all the way to Tallahassee, which is North Florida, not too far from Georgia state line. And ultimately, I think that we were able to empower people, because we were able to interact with people who felt like society had forgotten about them, who felt like they didn't have a voice, who felt like they couldn't really have a stake in making any change. And we took them from not being able to vote to actually being able to run a small campaign office that was able to register people's vote. And also we did membership activities, since we brought people into our chapters and got them mixed in with our platform and our services that we offer for returning citizens, and helping them get their voting rights. But ultimately, giving people a sense of power. One of my favorite quotes from Malcolm X is the ballot or the bullet. And that quote is very misunderstood. He wasn't saying it was either or. He was saying that if you do not use the ballot to make yourself equal, then you'll be having to use the bullet to protect yourself from tyranny of oppression. And I think that's something that we all should be, just striving to live by to a certain extent. And that mean a lot to me personally, to be able to work on that project, being from a place like Columbus, Georgia, that seriously afflicted by mass incarceration. Racial injustice is all over the place. And I think just being from a place, my first haircut, was down in Mr. Chandler, Mr. Gibson, down in East Wind neighborhood, normally Facebook friends, so I know that's your part of town. And just being, St. Mary's Hall Elementary School, so I went to, elementary school growing up on the south side. And being blessed to be able to get to the point where I got education and was able to help people. But I think that being from a place like this actually made me uniquely qualified to do this type of work, because I really, understood the plight and struggle of the type of people we're trying to reach. Ultimately, I think giving a voice to the voiceless is exactly what we need to be doing all over the place, especially here in Columbus.
Absolutely. And thank you for introducing the term returning citizen. I'm going to start using that because I think that erases the stigma. That erases the stigma. So I'm going to use that term too, returning citizens, because. Say that again.
28,000, man.
You,
man, listen, bro. You my hero.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And see, we have returning citizens.
Man, I just had to acknowledge that. But
Go ahead. That's huge. That's definitely huge. We have returning citizens right here in Georgia that don't realize once they've paid all their fines and they're no longer on any type of paperwork and don't owe any money or anything of that nature, they only thing they have to do is register to vote. And you can participate in our voting process. We still haven't gotten that message out. Just like we all just celebrated, last week when Juneteenth became a national holiday, and the significance of that is it took 2 years after slavery was ended by the president for the people in Texas to get the message that slavery had actually ended. And so oftentimes we don't do the best job at communicating to our community things like this, that returning citizens can vote and participate. And Norman, I know you know that's an important thing. Now, Lucas, real quick.
That's something that I'm because that's something I should have did that I didn't do, Ted. And I'm just going to be honest, because, I've been to prison 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just easy me going to the civil service bill, filling out a piece of paper, and I was able to vote after I got off all papers.
Just that easy. And we need to encourage more people to have their voices heard. You can't expect elected leaders that don't know you to do things for you or to vote for you. So therefore, you got to put people in office and have a voice to support those that's going to carry your message. Because at the end of the day, all of us are paying tax dollars. And Congressman Bishop always says politics is simply about who get what, when, where, and how. And so if you're looking at who get what, when, where, and how, you want to have some type of influence on that individual who determines who get what, when, where, and how. And if they're not doing what's for the best interest of the people they're supposed to be serving, we need to get them up out of that, simply put. If they're not talking to people like a Norman Quarles or a Lucas Melton to find out what can we do to fix what's happening in our community, it's time for them to go. Because many of them are truly not connected to the community the way that you guys are. Now, Lucas, I want you to talk a little bit about your interaction here in Georgia with some statewide campaigns. Well, not necessarily campaigns, with organizations to help turn out the vote and get people registered, not only for the 2020 election, but also for that January runoff.
Yeah, so in capacity as a consultant, I was able to work with Hard Knock Strategies, who was working with the Georgia Project based in Atlanta. And we came in right before the runoff, and we were able to register about 6,000 people to vote. Right before the cutoff, which was probably not even 2 weeks before we touched the ground here. I think we got about 6,000 people registered to vote in some crucial areas for voter registration. Numbers were really, really low. And it turned out to be very, very useful because that margin was razor thin, as we all know. Moreover, we were able to knock about 850,000 doors across the state of Georgia in mainly minority communities targeting young folks, 18 to 40 low propensity voters, folks who probably would vote, folks who are registered to vote, but they just don't know when the elections are. So that was definitely one of the highlights of, the work I've been doing in the movement, is being able to, for the first time, come back and actually work in my hometown of Columbus, Georgia, and do something, at that level. Because I've, run these programs in a lot of other states, never, in my own hometown. So it was really, really special to be able to do that in my own backyard, and turned out to be very, very pivotal to the turnout of the election, as we were able to get a couple hundred thousand people to turn out from our universe that we are not known, if not more. And turned out we needed every single one of those votes. Because, I know that, different folks have different opinions about politics and whether or not, the government is the way to actually liberate people. But one thing you can't argue with is that you can't have a madman in the White House in the state to be safe at night for too long. And so that election was extremely important and basically protecting the integrity of America, because no matter how we got here, we're still Americans. We got to live in this country, and this country needs to operate for all citizens. So being able to show people what democracy looks like, that democracy is a verb, democracy is what you do, is really, really cool. And be able to do it in my hometown and in the state that I'm from is even better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Norman, I want to bounce back to you real quick. Norman, one of the things that hurt my heart the most is when I'm talking to many of our young people. I'm talking about, these are like middle schoolers and some of your a little older kids in elementary school, closer to fifth grade, things of that nature. And they will honestly tell you they feel like no one cares about them. They feel that no one cares about their community. They feel that their community has been left behind. They feel that they don't have the same support that they see a lot of other people in other communities receive. And I tell you, I do my best when I hear that to convince those individuals that that's just not true. That there are people like you, like Lucas, like myself, like the Rileys, and I'm probably gonna get in trouble. I'm starting naming names. I should never do that. But there's so many people here in this community, in our city, that are fighting every day for these young folks to give them that platform that they need to move forward. Norman, for any parents that may be listening or any young folks that may be listening, can you give them a word of inspiration?
Sure. Get your kids involved in something. Get your children involved in something, extracurricular activities, whether it's sports, whether it's science club, gymnastics. Young people got a lot of energy. And what we need to do is we need to channel all that energy in positive ways. I would say that. I would also say talk to your children more. We all understand life gets us all. We go in here, we go in there, we see our child here, there. And listen, we gotta get back in our children's lives. Like remember how our parents were when we were young, how they were in all of our business? we got to get back in all of our kids' business and keep them off them computers all day long. You know, we got to teach children how to relate again. Most young people, you can't, you know, they don't even relate to adults.
That's
we
right.
We got to be relatable. We got to sit our children down. We got to talk to our children. We got to get in our children's lives. We have to keep our children in positive things outside of school.
Absolutely.
We have to be able to, you know, like I said, we've heard it all before, that the idle mind is the devil's workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So I see so many young kids wandering around out here just aimlessly.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's inevitable, because you can't save them all. But what we can do, you know, we need some type of forum within ourselves, within our community, in which, like the 911, what it is, the 311, we need to be able to get information to people. We need to be able to get the right information to our communities, you know?
Absolutely, so absolutely.
There needs to be, in the streets, we call it a one-stop shop.
And that's what we got to do. You know, I've said this, Norman, in the room with so many nonprofit leaders and execs. I said, just putting it on Facebook is not enough. Just putting up a flyer is not enough. You got to get down into those communities, because, you know, even Pew Institute taught us that, you know, up until I think it was somewhere around 2019, 70% of people in poverty was getting their internet access through phones. Phones gave us the opportunity, that gave them opportunity to have access to the internet that we didn't have prior to. And the thing is, that should show us right there how is very hard for information to really flow where it needs to be. But Norman, I appreciate you and all the work that you've done and doing. And I appreciate your honesty, because you didn't have to share that, you know, you've been to prison 3 times. You didn't have to share that. But see, my philosophy is, Norman, and you know this about me, and my philosophy will always be, I don't judge people on what they've done in their past. I look at what you're doing now. What difference are you making? What change have you made in your life? That's what I'm going to judge you on. We all make mistakes. A lot of people have made mistakes. You know, and who am I to hold something against somebody when their life has changed, when they're a different person now? That's just the way I look at it. So, brother, I appreciate you. I respect you. You know that I appreciate you. And I thank you for what you're doing, because everybody can't do what you're doing. Everybody absolutely cannot do that. Now, you know, brothers, when we get to talking, 30 minutes go by real fast. And we're on our last 2 minutes here.
Let me share this real quick, Brother Teddy. About what Sheriff Countryman is doing. Sheriff Countryman allowing me to go into, you still there, boss?
Mm-hmm.
Sheriff Countryman has been allowing me to go into the Muscogee County Jail, in the dorm, and minister to men. We've seen over 350 men give their life to Christ. And I just wanted to give my man Greg a shout out for that, because I'm watching young men's lives be changed in jail.
So shout out to the Sheriff Countryman for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Greg is a great friend of mine, and I appreciate all that he's doing. Yeah, he and Chief Blackman inherited this situation that we're in now. We can't act like these numbers are brand new. These things are something that have transitioned to them. Now, Lucas, I want to give you the closeout word for us real quick. From an organizing perspective, and being that there are a lot of people in our region, in our area, that seems to be a little frustrated with the way things are moving, or the lack of movement of things, what would you say to those from an organizing perspective on give them motivation to get engaged, to get involved, to make a difference in their community?
Oh, yeah, well, the power is within the people here in America. The politicians, the elected officials, the government, they all comprise of us. We allow them to be there. The second that we want to ask questions, the second that we want to say enough is enough, the second that we say we want change, we don't have to wait. And we have the tool of the vote to go and put people in office who can be proactive and do things to actually better people's lives, like Sheriff Countryman Alon Norman to come in and speak to men about their souls at the foundational level, because my political doctrine means nothing if their mind not right. Right, if they spirit not right, what I got to say about voting and get behind this candidate and this policy means nothing. So just having people like that that actually care about community, finding more countrymen that actually care about the people in the community and the people that actually are doing the work to actually help folks at the elementary level and making sure that they're getting platforms, right, and making sure that we do whatever it takes. And that we need to start passing ballot initiatives to challenge city council. They're not doing what we need them to do. And we need to start organizing against people who are apathetic, find a candidate to replace them. We need to do that. We need to start training people for the next generation, showing them how to run a campaign and making them, you know, competent and comfortable to do that. We need to do that. We need to not sit back and wait. You know, whatever the problems are in our community, then we need to start creating solutions and find the people, voices, who advocate for them. And if we can't find those people, then we got to become those people.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Change cannot wait. And if we want change, we got to make it happen. Brothers, thank y'all so much for being here today. I really appreciate your honest talk. To wrap up our Men's Empowerment Month, you two are certainly two men in our community that are out there making it happen. And you're doing what you got to do to make it happen. So I'm extremely appreciative of you. Thank you so much. This has been another edition of Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, a special Men's Empowerment Month edition. We're wrapping Men's Empowerment Month up for the month of June. We got to be a part of our community. We got to be engaged. I just want to leave us with one last point. If you look at the voting without the state of Georgia, throughout the state of Georgia, even here locally, you see that black women really show up to vote. They are there voting. Even the black male vote makes a difference, but we could be more impactful. We must start having a serious conversation about our people engaging and being involved politically. It is no longer an option. It is mandatory if we want to see the change that we desire to see. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. You are the change. Be the change. Vote and vote for a change. Take care.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.